Ever felt like your to-do list is just exploding? Like
Yeah.
it's multiplying faster than you can possibly tick things off?
Oh, absolutely.
Or maybe you've heard it in feedback, right?
Yep.
That phrase tends to take on too much, or the classic needs to delegate more.
Very common.
We've all been there, I think.
Yeah.
That feeling that it's just quicker or, gonna be done right if you just do it yourself.
Yeah, that DIY trap.
Exactly. But, well, we know where that leads. Feeling totally overwhelmed, maybe burnt out, and honestly, a bit stuck.
Definitely stuck.
So today, we're going to tackle that head on, this deep dive. It's all about delegation, but not just as some chore you have to do.
No, much more than that.
More like, well, a transformative leadership art. Our mission is to really get why it feels so hard to let go sometimes, and to pinpoint the really profound benefits it unlocks for you, yes, but also for your team. And then the crucial part,
The how.
exactly, to arm you with a clear, actionable playbook so delegation actually sticks. So those tasks don't just, boomerang right back to your desk.
Right. Avoiding the boomerang effect is key.
For this, we're drawing on some really great insights from two sources: Mastering Delegation, The Shift to Effective Leadership, and The Art and Science of Effective Delegation.
Both excellent resources.
Yeah, we're going to pull out the best bits, kind of give you a shortcut to becoming a delegation pro.
Sounds good.
So let's start at the start, the why. I mean, beyond just getting some time back in your day, why is delegation such a game changer? What's the real impact?
Well, what's really striking is how the data backs this up. It's not just about, feeling less busy. It's strategic.
Okay.
Take this Harvard Business Review study. They tracked 27 CEOs for 3 months, and the ones who delegated effectively, they saw real significant productivity gains.
So not just shuffling papers, but actually getting more done that
Yeah,
matters.
exactly. They were better able to focus on the big picture stuff, the
Yeah.
strategic priorities that frankly, only they could handle instead of getting buried in the day-to-day weeds.
That makes a lot of sense. Because really, as a leader, your highest value is in that strategic thinking, right?
Precisely.
But does it actually hit the bottom line? Like, can we see it in the numbers?
Oh, absolutely. There was a Gallup survey that looked at this. It found CEOs who are identified as sort of high delegators actually generated 33% greater revenue back in 2013.
Wow, 33%. That's
It
huge.
really is. So it's not just about personal efficiency. It's tied directly to business growth. But
Yeah.
the benefits go even further than the financials or just your own schedule.
Okay, so you mentioned the bigger picture. Are we talking about the team side of things now? Morale, engagement, that kind of stuff?
Exactly that. The American Psychological Association, they did this work and well-being survey, found that employees who have more autonomy, which, comes directly from good delegation, they report higher job satisfaction.
Makes sense.
Lower stress levels, too, and just a greater sense of well-being overall. When you delegate well, you're not just handing off a task. You're actually fostering ownership. You're speeding up results. And critically, you're nurturing people's skills and capabilities. You're implicitly saying, I trust you.
I believe in you.
Precisely. I see your strengths and I want you to use them and grow. It builds this environment of trust and respect, which is just invaluable.
Okay, so it really sounds like a complete win-win. You win, the team wins, the business wins. So here's the kicker, right? If it's so good, if the benefits are so clear, why is it still so incredibly hard for so many of us? What's the block? What holds us back from using this leadership superpower?
That really is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's something leaders struggle with at, well, at every single level. It's
Yeah.
so common to get that feedback, needs to delegate more, takes on too much, maybe gets too involved in the
Yeah,
details.
heard those before.
Right. And the reasons, they're often pretty deep-seated. They tie into how we see our role, maybe even our own value or self-worth. Let's maybe talk through like seven common traps, these mental blocks that stop us delegating effectively. And they often lead to that boomerang effect we mentioned, where tasks just mysteriously end up back with you.
Okay, let's unpack those traps. What's the first one?
The first is what you might call the short-term gratification trap.
Yeah.
It's that belief, that gut feeling, that it's genuinely faster to just do it yourself than to take the time to explain it properly.
Right.
You get that quick win, that immediate satisfaction of checking it off the list, even if it costs you way more time and energy in the long run.
Ah, the classic, it'll take me 5 minutes, but an hour to explain. I think we've all fallen for that one.
Exactly. Then number two, there's the perfectionism paradox. You kind of doubt anyone else can possibly do it to your standard. That fear of imperfection just paralyzes you, stops you letting go.
You imagine all the things that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Third is the fairness fallacy. This one feels noble, but it's tricky. You worry about overloading your team. Maybe you feel like you're shirking your own duties if you delegate too much.
Like you're dumping on them.
Right. And it often comes from a good place, wanting to be fair. But it completely overlooks the crucial growth opportunities your team is missing because you're holding on to the work.
Okay, that's a really important angle. What was number four?
Fourth is the trust gap. And this is a big one. Just straight up doubts about your team's competence. Now look, trust has to be earned, yes. But it also needs to be given initially.
Yeah, start somewhere.
You do. And addressing any skill gaps, that's actually a part of your job as a leader. It's not a valid reason to just avoid delegating altogether.
So it's not just about their skills, but also about your willingness to invest in developing them. That's a key shift in thinking.
Precisely. Number five, the hero complex. Lots of leaders mistakenly think leading by example means doing everything themselves. Rolling up their sleeves for every little thing.
Being the indispensable one.
Yeah, wanting to be the one who saves the day. Instead of realizing that true leading by example is about modeling values, ethics, trust, and, well, empowered behavior.
Okay. Sixth.
Sixth, the indispensability illusion. This ties into the hero complex. Holding on to specialized knowledge, or maybe the most critical tasks, because it makes you feel vital, makes you feel important.
Like job security, almost.
It can feel that way, yeah. It can be a subconscious way to just maintain control, thinking it secures your position or respect.
And the last one, number seven.
And finally, number seven is simply personal enjoyment. You just really like doing certain tasks, you get satisfaction from them, and you're genuinely reluctant to pass them on, even if they aren't the best use of your strategic time.
Guilty's charged on that one sometimes.
I think we all are. And these reasons, these traps, they often connect back to what the sources call leadership loops. These are like ingrained patterns of behavior.
Leadership loops. Tell me more.
Yeah. So for instance, if you're often stuck in the grinding loop, meaning you're always bogged down in the operational details, feel you have to personally drive every single outcome, you'll naturally fall into that it's faster myself trap or the perfectionism one.
Okay, I can see that connection.
Or maybe you're in the pleasing loop, where you're constantly prioritizing making your team feel comfortable over actually pushing them to develop. Then that fairness fallacy becomes a huge blocker.
Right, you don't want to upset anyone.
Exactly. And there are others, like aligning, driving, shaping, building. But getting stuck in any one loop tends to feed these delegation traps. And that's what leads to the boomerang effect. Tasks keep coming back.
That framework makes so much sense. It's not just random excuses. It's how our own ingrained leadership habits, our loops, actually perpetuate the problem and the cost, the price of not delegating. I imagine it goes way beyond just your own stress levels.
Oh, it absolutely does. Yeah. That HBR study we mentioned, it also found that leaders who struggle with delegation spend, get this, 60% of their time on tasks that someone else could realistically handle.
60%. That's staggering.
Yeah, it is. That's over half your valuable time lost. Time that could be spent on strategic initiatives, the stuff that only you as the leader are really positioned to do. And yeah, inevitably, that leads to more stress, burnout for you, and a big drop in your own productivity and ability to innovate. You literally become the bottleneck.
Wow. Okay. And for the team, what's the ripple effect on them?
It's equally damaging, really, Gallup's research. It shows that employees who feel micromanaged, which is often a symptom of poor delegation, are twice as likely to leave their job within the next year.
Twice as likely. That's a huge retention issue.
Massive. So by not delegating effectively, you're not just hurting your own growth as a leader. You're actively risking losing your best people and seriously damaging team morale and engagement. It's this really vicious cycle that stunts everyone's potential.
So putting it all together, the cost of not delegating is just incredibly high. Personally, professionally, for the team, for the business, it's crystal clear. But the good news, right?
Yes, there's definitely good news.
The really actionable news is there's a path forward, a way out of these traps and loops. So let's talk about the how. How do we actually do this effectively? How do we move from feeling stuck to truly empowering our teams?
Okay, this is where we get practical. Let's bring in the SHIFT framework. It's a really useful 5-step playbook designed to help you delegate effectively, break free from those traps, and build that culture of empowerment.
Or SHIFT. Okay, I like acronyms. What does it stand for?
SHIFT stands for set context, hear fully, invite ownership, frame actions, and track progress.
Set context, hear fully, invite ownership, Frame actions track progress. Okay, that sounds pretty comprehensive. More than just, you know, throwing a task over the wall.
Exactly. It's a process. Should we walk through each step, maybe with some practical do's and don'ts woven in?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's break it down. Start with SET context.
Right. SET context. This is all about providing the why. You're not just saying do this. You're explaining its purpose, how it fits into the bigger picture, the team's goals, the company's strategy, why it actually matters.
So moving it from just a task to a meaningful contribution.
Precisely. So for SET context,
yeah.
Do clearly describe why this thing needs doing. Share the vision. Explain its strategic importance. Don't just tell them what to do without the why. If they don't have the context, how can they make good decisions along the way or really feel like they own the outcome?
Makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Okay, next step, H here fully.
This is about active listening, really hearing out your team members' questions, their concerns, maybe even their initial ideas about how to approach it. It's about making sure they truly understand and feel heard in the process.
This sounds crucial, especially for getting past that it's faster to do it myself hurdle.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually investing the time up front.
You are. It's an investment. So for hear fully, do make time for a proper two-way conversation. Encourage them to ask questions, clarify any doubts, maybe even ask, how are you thinking about approaching this? Invite their input. Don't withhold support or seem like you're rushing through the explanation. Tackling questions early stops bigger problems later, and, well, ignoring their potential input can really stifle creativity.
Okay, good point. Third step, I invite ownership.
This is where the empowerment really happens. You're explicitly giving them the responsibility, encouraging them to make the task theirs. It's fundamentally about trust and giving them the autonomy to figure things out.
Giving them the reins, essentially.
Exactly. For invite ownership, do. Define the desired outcome clearly. What does success look like? Provide the metrics. But, and this is key, allow them autonomy on how they get there. Maybe start with smaller, manageable tasks first. It builds their confidence and lets you see how they work.
Good tip.
Don't micromanage. Please don't micromanage. Avoid constantly checking in, especially if it's a new kind of task for them. It just screams, I don't trust you.
Right. It undermines the whole point.
Good.
So it's like saying, here's the destination. You navigate the route rather than giving turn-by-turn directions.
That's a great analogy. Precisely. Okay, fourth step. F, frame action.
Frame actions. What does that involve?
This is about setting the boundaries for success. Outlining the scope of the task, clarifying what resources are available, mentioning any absolute non-negotiables or constraints, but crucially, still allowing flexibility within those boundaries.
So providing guardrails, not a cage.
Perfect way to put it. For frame actions, do help them prioritize if there are multiple parts. Make sure they know what's most important to tackle first. And try to match the task not just to skills, but also to their interests if possible. That really boosts engagement and development.
Okay.
Don't keep shifting priorities around on them. That's incredibly frustrating. And don't just distribute tasks based purely on who has bandwidth without thinking about individual strengths or development goals. That leads to burnout for some and boredom for others. And try to ensure a fair mix, not just dumping all the routine stuff on one person.
All right, balance is key. Okay, final step. T-track progress.
Now, this is not micromanaging in disguise. This is about setting up appropriate checkpoints,
yeah,
offering support when needed, and providing timely feedback, both positive and constructive. It's how you ensure accountability and prevent that boomerang effect.
So staying connected without taking back control.
Exactly. For track progress, do agree on clear checkpoints up front. Let's touch base on Tuesday afternoon to see how it's going. Offer support. Be patient. Remember, if it's new to them, it might take longer than it takes you. And really importantly, celebrate their successes publicly. Acknowledge their achievements.
Crucial for morale.
Hugely. Don't show impatience by constantly following up unannounced. Don't hover. And please, never take credit for their success, even if you guided them significantly. Give credit where it's due.
That shift framework, combined with those do's and don'ts for each step, feels like a really solid, practical blueprint. It makes it seem much less daunting.
Right.
Let's tackle that elephant in the room for many managers, the skeleton crew problem.
Yes. But I have no one to delegate to.
Exactly. Everyone's already swamped, resources are thin, it feels less like delegation and more like just piling on. How do you handle that? Because that's a huge blocker for a lot of people.
It's a very real challenge, no doubt. When everyone feels stretched, delegation can seem impossible, even unfair. But there are still ways to think about it.
Okay.
One approach is to actively look for hidden capacity. Are there routine tasks currently being done by a more senior person that could potentially be standardized, simplified, maybe even partially automated, and then handled by someone more junior? Or tasks that could be batched differently?
Okay. Finding efficiencies first.
Right. Another strategy is strategic sequencing. Maybe you can't delegate five things right now, but could you delay one or two less urgent items on someone's plate to create the bandwidth for them to take on one delegated task that offers more growth? It's about making conscious
Rather than
trade-offs.
just adding to the pile.
Exactly. And then there's the powerful longer-term strategy, especially when you feel like you have no one ready to delegate to. That's delegating specifically for development.
Okay, tell me more about that.
This means you might consciously choose to invest your time upfront to train someone on a new skill or area, specifically so you can delegate certain types of tasks to them later. Yes, it might feel slower initially. You have to teach, guide, maybe tolerate a few mistakes.
Which goes against that faster to do it myself instinct.
It does. But you're not just solving today's workload. You're actively building future capacity and talent within your team. You're shifting your own mindset from just doing the work to building the capability to do the work. It's how you break out of that exhausting grinding loop and move towards a more sustainable building loop.
That's incredibly insightful. It really reframes delegation, doesn't it? It's not just about offloading your current tasks. It's an investment in the team's future and your own future as a leader, too.
Precisely. And ultimately, it all comes back to that cycle we talked about. Building trust, confirming ownership clearly, having those sensible checkpoints. When you do that, when you truly empower the smart people you hired, they will often surprise you. It reminds me of that great Steve Jobs quote.
Which one?
It doesn't make sense to hire smart people and then tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they can tell us what to do.
Ah, yes. That's powerful.
It really captures the essence of it, doesn't it? Leveraging the talent you have, not dictating to it.
Absolutely. Well, this has been incredibly helpful. As we start to wrap up this deep dive, maybe we can leave our listeners with a little challenge, a point for self-reflection.
Good idea.
Thinking about those leadership loops we touched on, grinding, pleasing, aligning, the others maybe take a moment to consider. Which one do you tend to operate in most often? And thinking back to those seven common traps that stop us delegating, which one feels most familiar? Which one do you tend to fall into?
Yeah, just that self-awareness piece. Recognizing your own patterns is always that critical first step towards making a real change.
Definitely. And maybe one final provocative thought for you to carry into your week. How might actively deciding to delegate just one task this week, maybe even a small one? How might that not only free up some of your own strategic headspace, but also potentially shift someone else's entire career trajectory, or maybe reveal a hidden talent on your team you never even knew was there?
It's amazing what can happen when you give people that opportunity.
It really is. Mastering delegation. It's not just another management technique on a checklist. It feels like a really pivotal step in your whole journey as a leader. It enables you to reach your own highest potential, sure, but also to truly unlock and leverage the incredible collective talents of your team.
Well said.
Thanks so much for joining us for this deep dive today.